Mirai was told about this matter, and also was shown at the place and location myself, where I also noticed that these called planets are not really planets. I may appear stupid when I ask a question about the stars, but I have been shown the difference between stars and planets, and surely this will be of interest to other human beings too. Will you thus explain the difference between stars and planets? Duh, that is not difficult, and easily explained. Planets are cosmic bodies which have practically no light of their own, and which get their light by a conversion of their sun's radiations falling on them. Stars are cosmic bodies which have their mere force of radiation, and which generates light from their own radiations. Both are inhabitable by creatures of sorts, stars as well as planets, if atmospherics and other circumstances permit it. Mia-I see, and what about the suns? Are they perhaps only on the outside solar formations, while inside may exist inhabitable planets? Duh, how made you come by this question? Miro, I have read in books about these matters. A man by the name of Jacob Lauber, has written decades or even centuries ago, some about such things. Me, moreover, has also written about Saturn and other planets, which with Sam Jays, I have now seen for myself, when Sam Jays brought me to these planets, and I was able to explore them with her help. Duh, I understand. Unfortunately, there exist on Earth many humans who write such kinds of books and other literature. As you can see, these are the products of fantasy. Also the fantasy interpretation with respect to livability of your sun. As no sun is like such statements. Mia, yes. Okay, I thought so. It was at this point that the Palladian ship effected a rendezvous with another great space mother ship of the Dull Universe, where meetings were held between the two societies, and where Mia, to his great surprise, was able to meet Arskit again, after 10 years. That was his surprise. He went over to the Dull ship with Sam Jays in her small craft, and they were taken inside. He was almost overcome with excitement and emotion. He thought, man alive. There she stands. There stands Arskit and she smiles. I can't speak. A confounded block is in my throat. Now Arskit walks toward me, wordless and smiling, and now she touches my hand, squeezes it and draws me towards her. Dear me, is this real? I am not dreaming. Oh girl. Arskit-you really are not dreaming. Be very welcome with us. It is a delight and honor to greet you here. I see that a change has happened. I am sorry. Mia, you mean my arm? Arskit-yes Mia, do know that I have already accommodated myself to it, long ago, and I can't even imagine any more, a life with two arms for me. I have forgotten that. Arskit-dash if you say so, then it must be. But me, don't you wear a helping device? Mia, on Earth, unfortunately, these things are still very primitive. Arskit-dash I could have a device produced for you, which would fully substitute for your arm. A half-organic apparatus. Mia, many thanks, Arskit, that is really very kind of you. But do believe me, on the one hand I can no more imagine myself a life with two arms, and on the other hand, I know very well, that I have not just lost my arm without purpose and sense. The accident and the loss had to be. By that event I have learned immensely much, and will further on learn still more. Arskit-dash these thoughts are worthy of you. I just thought that a help in certain ways would be of service to you. Mirai, really thank you very much, Arskit, but I do not want it. You know that such an apparatus would also conjure up many earth troubles. We have many others there who have also lost legs and arms, who would then desire such means, and against whom it would be unfair for me to conceal such from them. To this moreover is added the problem, that many of those humans, if they had such helping devices, would again become unappreciative forms of life. You know, things being as they are, that the human being falls again into materialism, if only he may well up again. On the other hand, scientists and governments would discover the matter, and this could lead to catastrophe. If I had such a semi-organic apparatus or prosthesis, then for sure I could not conceal it for long. The consequences would be that they would take two away from me to examine and study very thoroughly, And if it was semi-organic, then a way for understanding and duplicating the details may not take long, from which scientists could then produce robots and similar things. In our present society, these will be used for evil war-connected purposes, possibly catastrophic for Earth. As enticing as your offer is, ask it, just for those reasons I could not accept it. Ask it, dash those are unselfish words, dear friend, and you are right in them too. I allowed myself to be guided by my compassion. There was considerable discussion of plans and missions and a number of other things, and the transmission Mir received in that first sitting after his return filled scores of pages. We have only been able to abstract see little here, disconnected parts that seem to be of special interest to casual students of this phenomenon, or that might answer some of the scores of questions so often raised about this case. The whole thing is highly exotic and difficult to believe under any circumstance. Almost immediately after returning from the big trip with his exposed rolls of film, Mir took them to his regular commercial photo processing company to be developed. Mir and the group waited anxiously. They all wanted to see the spectacular pictures. Finally, the slides and prints were ready for pickup, which took a lot of money for the number of rolls of film exposed and the small number of people to pay for them. The group thought they now had the photo proofs they wanted. The films were sent for, and when the packages arrived and were opened, they all were crushed to see that every picture made using the special viewing screen, with both Mia's camera and the second similar one used by Sam J's, were grossly overexposed and light to the point of losing nearly all the image in the pictures. They were so bad that they were not even reproducible. The other pictures taken aboard the ships, without using the device, had wavy flashes of color shot through them, and were also distorted and all but useless as well. Most were also overexposed, evidently due to the properties of the light aboard. Another problem was also noted now that the pictures were back, the 49mm, slightly wider than normal angle of spread of the lens on Mir's camera was too wide to get close-up shots of the images in the special viewing screen, and even worse with the smaller normal viewing screens, without getting the edges of the screen in the picture also, and he had problems with the focus. The disappointment was disheartening, and Mir was forced to resort to collecting other images to illustrate what he was trying to describe, including observatory pictures of some of the stellar wonders. Some of these were mounted in the picture albums by his friends, who kept them up, and eventually became confused by others as the pictures from the trip. In fact, that is what we were once told by somebody there also, which we knew was not true, because those views are only possible from the point in space occupied by the Earth, and even then through special hydrogen and other filters not available for small cameras. Mir communicated his disappointment to Sam J's, who later picked up the diapositives for their scientists to study to see what could be done to improve the effort. Those were never brought back to Mir. Another problem was the one experienced before, with the disappearance of spacecraft photos. Here again, most of the photos made aboard the mothership, not using the special screen, were lost in the processing line of handling, from laboratory back to Mir, and he never saw them. Those would have been the best ones. Some frames came back completely black. Only the few pictures that were on other rolls together with pictures through the special viewing device ever came back to Mir. Very little of the photographic efforts aboard the Great Spacer survived today, and what does is of little value for analysis. Remark. It was later found that the local photo store had been forced by the hidden agencies to let them filter the pictures from laboratory, before Mir's got them back, so they will probably never appear. The transmission of the trip notes was resumed in the 32nd contact at 14:16 on the 8th of September 1975, as a thought transmission contact called by Mir to settle some problems he was having with the notes on the big trip. Sam J's was busy and unable to engage in any very long contact and asked Mir to hold off until the next day when she would have more time. The contact was reopened on the 9th of September 1975. The discussion concerned a number of matters which Mir was not allowed to reveal to any other people. He was advised of a series of events that would transpire, involving him and also others of our world. The reason for secrecy was to avoid influencing the events and thus the course of evolutionary patterns already cast. He was given the information so as to be able to measure our position in event time, which is not the same as clock time. These notes also reviewed a discussion of religions and the real spiritual nature of Earth humans at this position in time. A discussion of parallel worlds in both super and suborder dimensions and their effect on our world normal to us at this time was also reviewed for the notes. A discussion of efforts by Earth powers to create ships similar to those of the extraterrestrials observed in our skies was also reviewed. The 33rd contact on Friday, the 12th of September 1975, was the first face-to-face meeting since the extended trip, and it took place at 10:57 in the morning after urgent calls by Mia for a contact. Sam Jays, yesterday you tried several times to call me. Unfortunately, I could not respond, because there were some very important things to do which could not be postponed. Mia, this I found out, as you just warded me off. What had you to do that was so important? I as well had something important, appearing so for me. Namely, on the night of Wednesday the 10th of September, at 20:45 hours, south, west of Hinwa, we saw a very great orangeed color, luminous, flying, object. Seen from my house, it was about 1.20 to 1.40 meters, apparent size, in diameter, and without any doubt it was a spherical formation. After a few minutes the object disappeared in a black and evidently artificial cloud. At 21:45 I could see the object again in the southeast. The light of the object was this time very intense, and the sky had a very peculiar violet-red-blue color. Enough light was generated that I could film the object while it jumped around like a jack-o'-lantern. Then it suddenly sank down very steep in the area near Barkelberg, and there it simply hung in the air. This also I was able to film. Then it shot off like a missile towards the east, returned again rapidly to very close, and started to pulse a very intense light. The peculiar color of the sky faded, and then the object jumped around again like crazy. Soon I was able to film it, while it disappeared from my viewer frame. Twice more I got it in the camera field and filmed it again. I only hope the film comes out well, which I will tell you when it is developed. What I am wondering is this: was this object a beam ship? Was it one of yours? Why did you demonstrate so openly, over town, if it was one of yours, because it could be seen as well by others? Or was it a strange object? And why do you suddenly fly around here with such big ships when you told me that the great ones would only come here in an emergency? The object would have to be at least 600 to 700 meters in diameter, if I have estimated the distance from me to the ship right, which was at the farthest about 20 kilometers. Last night I saw the object again at 2100 hours, when it hung very far away in the air, near the mountain we call the. This mountain is, seen from my house, in the southwest direction. What about this object, and why do you just swoop along here in the environment with it? Sam Jays, it was just concerning this. We were so much occupied by the object seen by you, that I could not speak with you, and had to tell you to wait. The yesterday and before yesterday object was the same, which you had already seen in the evening of 20 April, and photographed. That was not a beam ship, as we say, but a small spacer type. Also, it does not belong to us, but to rather unkind intelligences. They are very interested in our work. And for some time they have been interested in you, for they want to kidnap you. These intelligences intend to bring Earth and Earthmen under their control. For this they do not shrink from kidnapping. It is one of the groups who operate through Earth religions and find success in this. The conversation then turned to events in the Bermuda Triangle and the reports of strange things happening there. Sam Jays observed that some of the strange events had a natural origin, but acknowledged that not all were really natural. Her biggest concern, though, was our unnatural employment of atomic energy and its dangers to all life here. These extraterrestrials are not the only ones to express such concerns, however, and the damage to our ionosphere by chlorofluorocarbons pales in comparison to that caused by radiation energies from atomic explosions. And from another source, not from here, there are other more serious conditions produced by man which are having an even greater destructive effect on our ionosphere, which may already be irreparably out of control. A UFO contactee in Minnesota, who also is told by his entirely human extraterrestrial visitors that they are coming from what we call the Pleiades, who has been visited by them since his first abduction in 1958, has carried on extensive dialogues on scientific and technical subjects so profound that he had to enroll in college physics courses to learn enough to grasp what they were trying to explain to him. They told him that our toying with the atom was our greatest danger, and worse, our scientists had no knowledge of the dangers they were introducing in our world. At those extraterrestrials' suggestion, he produced a monograph on nuclear energy versus planet Earth, and sought to bring it to the attention of science circles and open minds wherever he could. And to gift this emphasis, the ETs told him in advance what our survey team sent to the South Pole to study the recently discovered hole in the ionosphere over the Antarctic would find. This monograph was written in August 1986, as a team was being prepared for the expedition to Antarctica to try to find out what is causing the hole discovered by the IRAS satellite in 1979 and growing. A copy of that monograph is reproduced following this page for your review. We have also included a copy of the letter transmitting this monograph to us so you can see for yourself that we received out copy weeks after the first ones were sent out. What astounded us was the earlier evidence that the Pleiadians visiting Switzerland had explained the same destructive effect of our atomic explosions to Mir in 1978. In an uncirculated dialogue on the dangers of our atomic sciences in the hands of people who did not know enough about what they were doing to be safe, they cautioned that we may already have gone too far and signed our suicide note. They explained, in effect, that the radiation particles produced by our fission and fusion reactions are only the gross result of the disarrangement in mass, but that far more serious is the permanent and ever-growing imbalance in the still undiscovered particles and force in the deranged atom and its effect on its neighbors, constantly growing in matter, like a cancer. For what Mir was told in this respect, refer back to the notes on his 35th contact presented here on page 148 and subsequent. As was expected, the team sent to the South Pole came to no conclusions, and even more important, our predicted holes at the North Pole were also discovered by the TOMS satellite late in 1986. Further on, the extraterrestrial's suggestion of the contactees' produced monograph on nuclear energy versus planet Earth, nuclear energy and planet Earth nuclear fission and fusion as employed today for energy production and military uses are killing this planet, and no one in the scientific community has any idea why it's dying or how to save it. The reason for this is simple: they do not understand atomic structure, solar structure, or the complete dynamics of falling bodies. Physics textbooks erroneously declare our sun to be, in effect, a nuclear reactor. It is not. Because the scientific community feels confident that nuclear power is a part of nature, they, as a body, have ceased to consider the possibility that perhaps they do not have all of the answers. Due to this arrogance, they are not even looking at nuclear technologies as possible causes of the damage we see occurring to our ionosphere, and if they do not look, they will not see. Our planet is very sick and is weakening daily. It has reached a point where Earth's own mechanisms can no longer heal the wounds as quickly as they're being inflicted. In other words, we have reached a point of no return in that if nuclear fission and fusion are not abandoned and salvage operations begun immediately, the ionosphere will continue its rapid disintegration until life on Earth ceases to exist. In this paper, we will attempt to explain in brief what is happening and why. But most particularly, we aim to warn the reader of what the future holds if this insanity is not stopped, and soon. Our emphasis must be on predictions because, frankly, the tests and results upon which we base our theory break many currently accepted laws of physics, and so will be rejected out of hand by many of those who have spent their lives properly memorizing those laws. To prove we are credible and do indeed know what we're talking about, we must therefore predict what the scientific community has not predicted and can never explain using current physical law. Only in this way can we impress the reader with the truth of what we say, and gain allies in our effort to halt these deadly technologies before it's too late. So then, to begin. The process of nuclear fission. During the process of nuclear fission and fusion, an atom is forced open, electrons escape. Science and industry assure us that this process is safe, because even though our knowledge of atomic structure is incomplete, any unforeseen damaging effects are prevented by the massive steel and concrete containment vessels. They are correct insofar as containing electrons is concerned. But what they have yet to realize is there exists much smaller particles of mass and energy which pass easily through the containment walls, and which strip off particles from the containment vessels themselves as they pass through. This results in an unforeseen and rapid decay of the containment structure itself, weakening it greatly within a decade, which in turn allows even larger particles, still smaller than an electron, to escape. Obviously, the problem quickly becomes progressive. These minute particles released from an atom are negative in respect to planet Earth. This means that these particles will be repelled from Earth's surface to the outer regions of the ionosphere. Of course, these particles are yet more negative in value than solar energy, and are also repelled from the energy emitted from the Sun. Because these very negative particles are repelled from solar energy, they move around the Earth, staying on the dark side of the planet in order to avoid direct contact with solar energy. These very negative particles tend to settle in at any location which remains in darkness for substantial periods of time. For a part of the year, this area is at the southern polar region, Antarctica. Accumulating at the South Pole, these particles assemble themselves with the normally positive ions of the ionosphere, which results in the production of an extremely negative plasma. As the South Pole again begins to face toward the Sun, September to October, this highly negative plasma is repelled, and now has nowhere to go but to Earth. This results in a hole in the ionosphere in the South Pole region. Because of the massive amounts of these very negative particles being released, the hole in the ionosphere will be found to have increased dramatically in size in 1986, possibly as far as the 600 parallel line. If the phenomena is monitored, it will be noticed that the hole will develop a 24-hour oscillation, and that the oscillation will always be away from the Sun's light. This again is due to the fact that these very negative particles, now assembled into a very negative plasma, will be repelled from solar energy. As the South Pole faces toward the Sun, the North Pole lies in darkness. Therefore, the negative, unassembled particles in the upper atmosphere will tend to settle in near the North Pole, and will assemble with positive ion there. When once again the North Pole faces toward the Sun, the resulting negative plasma will be forced to the surface of Earth. Our calculations indicate that in the early months of 1987, a hole in the ionosphere will be found to have appeared over the North Pole. Some of the results of this disruption of the ionosphere will have immediate effects. For instance, as great shells of this negative plasma are pushed into existing shells of plasma, very adverse and abnormal weather conditions will be experienced worldwide. In areas where the ionosphere is thicker, there will be an over-filtering of solar energy, causing a reduction of sunlight available on Earth and a subsequent increase in rainfall. In areas where the ionosphere has thinned, expect severe heat waves and drought conditions. Also, iron deposits attract these negative particles of mass and energy, and so areas with large deposits of iron can expect drastic changes in their weather cycles. A less immediate effect of this attraction to iron deposits will be that life forms in these areas will experience genetic changes, and an alarming increase in birth defects will be seen in these areas. Likewise, incidence of cancer and other diseases related to a breakdown in immune system activities will be noted. As the destruction of the ionosphere continues, more drastic effects will be observed. For example, as these undetected particles of mass and energy are accepted at the poles, and elsewhere, they will undoubtedly result in an increase in the energy exchange of our planet. This will cause an increase in the rotation rate of the Earth. At first, this increase will be considered a negligible factor, but the increase will be progressive, and will eventually result in the Earth changing its orbit. The ecliptic will increase, and the Earth will begin its drift away from the Sun. The increase in energy exchange will also heat up the interior of our planet, resulting in great internal pressure. This pressure will be released in the form of great earthquakes and increasingly greater volcanic actions. The end result of these actions will be great continental shifts, and areas lying along existing fault lines will be at great risk. This increase in energy exchange will also cause a warming of the Earth's surface, and the polar ice caps will begin to melt. Coastline areas will begin to disappear. Much more could be said, but this outline of events will give the reader a fair idea of why we say the situation on Earth is critical. To date, the focus of the anti-nuclear movement has been to eliminate bombs and testing, control radioactive wastes, etc. Few people have considered that perhaps the splitting of atoms in and of itself is anti-nature. Unless it is stopped and decontamination procedures initiated, our future is bleak. The problems will not go away by themselves. Humankind has done the damage, and now we must repair it. The technology now exists which will provide the tools, but our group cannot do it alone. We seek allies. Chapter 6, Other Atmospheric Planets. After the meetings with the Dulls, and the exchange of equipment, the Palladian ship made a number of hyperleap trips to various locations, and sometimes things of interest were pointed out to me. One of those areas of special interest to us is the variety of other atmospheric planets mentioned and their apparent frequency in the widths of the cosmos. The 34th contact was a face-to-face meeting on Sunday, the 14th of September 1975. It began at 13:43 after being called by Mia to get some answers. He wanted to identify the writer of an anonymous letter. Sam Jays went into her ship, interrogated some equipment devices, and gave him the identification he sought. They discussed the Bermuda Triangle at great length in this meeting, and then the Mia insisted on transmitting more of the report on the long trip. That meeting broke up with an arrangement to transmit more trip report in the very near future. It was 2 days later, on the 16th of September, that all things were in order to resume the thought transmission on the big trip. Here we run into a problem on distances that we cannot at this time resolve, and so we shall leave these distances out of our presentation altogether. First of all, the ETs do not measure distance in terms of light years because that is our unique creation. They say the speed of light is neither constant nor does it travel in a straight line, except over very small distances, being speeded up and slowed down, and bent every which way by magnetic fields of force, which are everywhere. They do not find time fixed either, as we perceive it, nor linear in the full sense of the word. Therefore, a light year is a fictitious and meaningless misnomer created by us. It is like trying to measure the distance between stars with angle worms. We calculate the age of creation to be 12 billion to 20 billion years, depending on who you consult and when. It was only a few years ago that it was thought by the same sciences to be about 4 billion, still a lot of years, old, but only a few hundred years ago, those same sciences said our sun was the center of the universe and that it was created in 6 days only a few thousand years before that. Have we reached the ultimate answer yet? When we asked about distances of trillions and quadrillions of light years, we were laughed at by scientists. There apparently is no such thing to them. We never got to decisions, which has been mentioned in the contact notes. The light year is an arbitrary unit of measure, and while useful for one kind of measure is useless for another. We can measure a book very usefully in inches, the width of a thumb to primitive man, but it is a useless value for measuring the width of our local galaxy. Perhaps light year is just as useless when we go beyond our familiar realms. These terms, weak as they are for our purpose here, are all values for our known physical universe and may not apply at all in another realm or universe, such as might be postulated for hyperspace. Thus, we are in no position to accurately judge the figures given. For this reason, we will omit such references now and simply report the observations. A hyperleap is completed and conditions stabilize. We are much farther from Earth than before. This is the galaxy of Asap, and there in front of you, you see the world of Desim. It is inhabited by human creatures which, according to your history, would be something equivalent to your Middle Ages.